Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, this is Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast, and our guest today is
Clay McLeod Chapman. Hello.
Welcome to Turn the Page, Clay.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So this book is, it's already out by the time this episode will go up. However, as some of our listeners might know by this point, the Syosset Library is holding a summer-long virtual festival of literature celebrating horror. And this is the brainchilds of Becky Stratford from RA for All,
yeah,
who partners with
Becky.
Yeah, Becky's great.
She's amazing.
Her recently, and Conrad. Partners with the Horror Writers Association to really celebrate horror literature and dark fantasy, because what better time to read scary stories than the summer when you can have a campfire, but also anytime.
Every day is Halloween in our household here. So, but I feel like, you know, I owe Becky a huge debt of gratitude, because my God, she is such a champion for horror. And I feel like she really does this amazing job of just getting word out about books that you might not find otherwise. So, me included. So I feel like she gets 10% of every book she sells, as far as I'm concerned.
No, she's really great. And what I was mentioning before that we started recording was that this summer, since we're not doing a SciCon, which would be our Comic-Con event in the fall, we are leaning hard into that Summer Scares initiative and doing just a whole summer of virtual programming and podcasts that is celebrating horror. So please tell us about your book, because even though I'm sure Becky appreciates the lip service, we're not necessarily here
to talk about Becky.
I mean, we could sing her praises the whole time. However, if you do find any of this interesting, please check out special episode 21, where we do interview Becky and Conrad about Summer Scares. So Clay, tell us about your book.
Okay. I wrote a book called Whisper Down the Lane, and it is it's a psychological horror novel. It kind of focuses on the satanic panic era of the 80s, and maybe a little bit of modern day as well. It's essentially set in two timelines. There's 1983 and 2013. And in 83, we meet a young boy, 5-year-old by the name of Sean. And Sean tells a little white lie to his mother. And that white lie has some consequences that kind of ripples out in, you know, not only to consume his family, but his school, his classmates, his teachers, the administration. And from there it goes to the community, and it kind of ripples all the way out into the country with the satanic panic period, which in real life, I mean, this is a true event that spanned like almost, I think like over 10 years, frankly. And, you know, if you don't know much about the satanic panic period, it's definitely well worth your kind of Googling and research. There are a lot of amazing books, nonfiction books written about it, but mine's a fictional account. But then fast forward to 2013, we meet a man named Richard. And Richard is a recently married, now a stepdad. And strangely enough, a lot of the lies that Sean, 5-year-old Sean, told 30 years ago, seem to have an echo in Richard's life. And, you know, I think long story short, the past is never quite through with us and always comes back to haunt us. And things get pretty, pretty spooky from there.
Well, first of all, what I would like to say is, one thing I love is just a little Easter eggs to horror fans that you put in, for instance, using the last name Castevet for one of your characters. Oh, I was like, oh, nice.
I think I went way overboard with it, but I think the kind of dyed in the wool, like hardcore horror fans will be a little eye rolly at it. But, at least with the beginning of the book, I wanted it to be as fun as humanly possible, given
because that it gets into some really dark material. And to be honest, even though it is a fictional story, it is based in some things that actually happened. There was a case, at least one that I can think of, and I'm sure there's more that weren't as widely publicized, of some people who did run a nursery school and were accused of all sorts of horrible rituals being performed on children, and they lost everything.
Everything. The McMartin School trial. And that's kind of the centerpiece of the Satanic Panic period. But I mean, there were definitely a lot of other schools that kind of got sucked into that black hole of paranoia. But a pretty thorough cross-section of our country believed that there was a hidden network of devil worshipers working and operating in, you know, almost in plain sight, where, you know, your teachers, your politicians, your police officers, maybe someone from your own family, your neighbors, you never knew who, but they were out there and they were performing their rituals, their midnight masses, their animal sacrifices. I mean, you name it, it was happening. And yet there was like zero proof, no evidence, like nothing to kind of prove, other than the kind of conviction and the belief that this was happening, that they were out there. And that was enough.
I was a kid. I was in elementary school in the 80s, and I remember every Geraldo, every what is it, Sally, Jesse, Raphael. And I didn't come from a family that was necessarily religious, but I was terrified of this because I was told that this is what's happening everywhere. And I think for me, the worst consequences that came out of it was that I didn't get to play Dungeons and Dragons until college, because I was a little weary of it. And, you know, like, was, I don't even know. I mean, by high school, I should have been like, really? But at that point, it was then the problem was, it wasn't billed as satanic. For, you know, in my area, it was billed as uncool. And then I went to college and I'm like, this is actually very cool. And also,
it's very cool.
But when I was younger and probably would have benefited from it as a child most, it was like, no. And, but for other people, I mean, the consequences, like in that one case, I mean, they were real. And you had these books out, like Michelle Remembers. And they were, you know, passed around as fact. And it's kind of, it's dicey. It's dicey when you get into the history of what that book actually was. So please explain to us why you decided to write this book now. There's a lot of talk about the Satanic Panic now. And I'm curious, as a horror writer and as somebody who obviously was living through this time period, why now?
Yeah. Oh my God, the timing was, I almost want to say perfect, but I don't know if perfect is the right word to choose. But, you know, the book came out essentially the week of our kind of most recent, you know, moral mania with Little Nas X and his video. So I kind of joke that Quirk Books did a very good job with the kind of PR campaign.
They're brilliant, aren't they?
They are amazing. Amazing. But yeah, I mean, honestly, like the genesis for the book came about, I was a child of the 80s. I was born in the 70s, grew up in the 80s in that kind of Spielbergian kind of, you know, lens flare, you know, riding bikes through the neighborhood. But also I am a father now. Like, I am a dad of two boys. And, you know, frankly, for me, you know, divvying up the kind of narrative between these two time periods was kind of perfect, because it allowed me to kind of, you know, tap into my fears as a child and what I remember from the satanic panic period, but also now as a father, you know, probably one of the more terrifying things for me is sending my kids out into the world. Like I am absolutely petrified of the idea of my kids in the world. Like it's scary. And, you know, as a writer, I'm doing this god-awful thing where, you know, every day, you know, and this is probably more pre-pandemic, but like every day I would see them off to school and I couldn't help but like have those like worst case scenarios just play in my head. And I was like, well, you know, don't break a bone, or like, don't get kidnapped, or don't, like, and it's like, I'm doing this to myself. And it's like, I can't, you know, I can't curb my imagination, and it's awful. But, it, you know, when it came to writing Whisper Down the Lane, the idea was just, you know, history is cyclical. And, you know, the more, you know, it didn't just start in the 80s. I mean, I think you could, you know, say that, you know, moral mania and satanic panic was, you know, going all the way back to, you know, the Salem witch trials, or, you know, even further. Like,
yeah, that. Well, I know the Puritans get a lot of, the credit for that. And I know that they are part of the Salem witch trials, but even before.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. And I just think it goes to show that like this, I think it does say that like history is cyclical, and every so often it kind of, we have a resurgence. And, you know, I wanted to write about our kind of current, you know, QAnon, Pizzagate, you know, I wanted to tap into that, but, you know, I very specifically wrote about, this is all pre-QAnon, right. This is pre-Pizzagate, like, you know, none of that kind of exists within the sphere of this narrative, and that's a conscious choice, because I didn't, you know, to me, it's not, you know, I didn't want to necessarily get political with the narrative, but I feel as if, you know, there's always the storm clouds on the horizon. And to write about 2013 very specifically, it felt as if this was a period where you could kind of see things begin to kind of trend in that general direction. Mm. Like, you know, the belief that the Sandy Hook shooting was a hoax, and like those kind of raw
right, all of those theories. What are they called? False flag accusations.
Yeah,
that
yeah
have no basis in reality. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, I feel like that's the kind of beginnings of what was to come. So it seemed like a real ripe time to kind of like let's focus on things before things got really crazy. And
right, of course.
You know, but anyone who picks the book up is gonna know that, like, you know, a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, like that's what's on the horizon.
That's very interesting, and I think a lot of people who remember that time period are kind of calling back to it when they see all of the current conspiracies and how they're becoming mainstream. And as they became mainstreamed back then, because all of these, you know, like supposedly well-renowned talk show hosts were propping this all up. So yeah. Okay, so when you were writing the difference between Sean and Richard at different ages, how did you find it hard to get into the mind of a five-year-old versus an adult thinking back to when they were five? Did you think back to yourself? Did you use your own children for inspiration?
I didn't use my own children for inspiration. I think they'll be relieved to hear that.
Okay.
You know, it was me. I mean, I say it's me, but it's not my history per se, but it is definitely the thing that I was afraid of. I mean, I was afraid of the van with no windows. I was afraid of stranger danger. I was afraid because it was kind of, like hammered into our heads. Like, you know, you go outside, you know, we risked breaking our necks on our bikes every single day, but like that didn't matter. What mattered was don't get in the car with someone who said they were your uncle. It was
don't take a temporary tattoo with a butterfly because it's laced with LSD. That's one that I remember.
Oh man, that's amazing. But that's true, right? Like there, yeah. There are these kind of like either regional or these kind of like myths, these urban legends that
after
like, you know.
School special stories. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. You know, you mentioned Dungeons and Dragons. Like there was that amazing Tom Hanks movie.
Oh yes. Monsters and Mazes.
Mazes. Yes. Where you're taught to be afraid of these things. Like this is, you know, and I think the book kind of explores it a little bit more, but like, and it's funny because now that the book has been out and there's been some kind of reader feedback, you know, some people will be like, oh yeah, I remember, you know, our church didn't allow us to have Cabbage Patch dolls, or other people would be like that. Never, you know, I don't
see. I forgot about that. That's something that I remembered when I was reading. I forgot that there was any, I mean, other than the fact that Cabbage Patch dolls are actually kind of crazy when you think about their lore, like these babies grow from cabbages that are pollinated by bunny rabbits that fly and then you adopt them.
Yeah, you
That's
take an
a whole
oath.
Other bag of candy.
Yeah, I mean from the research I did, it's amazing. There's this book. I don't know if it's still out there, but it's called Turmoil in a Toy Box or Turmoil in the Toy Box, and it was basically kind of a track that kind of focused on these are the toys that parents should be concerned about. And of course it was He-Man, it was My Little Pony, Dungeons and Dragons.
I was a huge fan of Skeletor, by the way. Huge fan of Skeletor. All I wanted when I was a kid was Castle Grayskull, and my mom was like, mm-mm.
see yeah. I mean, like, it's amazing because, like, you know, people would interpret the kind of the mythology of these toys. So like for Cabbage Patch Kids, like you know, you take an oath to adopt this baby and forever. I mean, and families, parents would be like, you know, that feels very, that feels against the kind of moral grain. So, you know, we interpret that to mean something else. And we won't allow it. With He-Man, it was amazing because it was like, you know, here you have a second life. Like you have this Prince Valiant kind of character who, you know, he recites some incantation and becomes something other than who he is.
Which, by the way, thinking about it now, and as a fan of magical girl anime and manga, he was a magical boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? He said his oath and he had his little transformation to a new costume and his mascot changed.
Yeah. And I think when you're a child watching that, you know, I feel like if you want to look close enough, you can say to yourself, I don't feel comfortable in my skin, or I don't feel like I am the person who I strive to be or yearn to be. So I wish I had a spell that could make me He-Man or She-Ra or, you know, whatever, you know. I mean even Thundercats did it. It's phenomenal how, like, you know, the kind of second self hiding within your kind of, you know, your primary self. Like, it's, I don't know, like it's pretty, like, that was a narrative that was in toys and TV shows growing up, that, you know, but it was very code, like, you know, I feel like you had to look for it, and parents looked for it, and they, you know, they found the thing that they, you know.
I mean, for me, my parents, my mother just, I don't know, she wanted me to have a strawberry shortcake house, and Castle Grayskull was a little morbid looking, but.
Yeah, that Skeletor, he was amazing.
So great. So great. And the voice, Alan Oppenheimer, is, I mentioned him in a previous podcast. He's a legend, and he is 90 years old and you would not know it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
I mean, there's a really good balance of the things that are creepy and spooky in your book and guilt in general and how that's creepy and upsetting and scary.
Yeah.
In its own way. Were you really, like, was it hard to kind of find that balance of, okay, now we're going to be, you know, this is going to be sort of questionable, and this is really just the ghosts of the past.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting question. I feel like, you know, guilt to me has a very kind of corrosive quality to it. And the longer you hold on to guilt, the more it kind of curdles inside you. So Richard is a character who is, you know, pretty much just riddled with guilt. He's consumed by guilt, and mm-hmm. almost to the extent where, like, I view him to be something of a hollow shell, where the person he's become has so much to do with the choices that he made as a child or the things that happen in and around him. And, you know, I think that, like, he strikes me as someone who, for everything that he suffered from as a child, he makes a choice as an adult that almost kind of compacts the issue, or almost makes it worse. Whenever you can go right, he goes left, and it leads to some pretty scary stuff. But you know, it's funny because guilt, you know, I've always thought of it as trauma, where, like, the kind of the trauma of Sean, it almost kind of manifests itself in the character of Richard. So, but it's almost like kind of the same coin, you know, guilt and trauma.
And Sean had, Sean had other things going on. You know, he had not the most comfortable, stable home life.
Yeah.
And as a 5-year-old, I would, you know, it's a weird time because I have children who just turned 6, and they're really, that year from 5 to 6, it's almost like they're kind of coming out of a dream. They can retain more from, you know, memories of things that happened in the past, but they're questioning a lot of things, and they're voicing a lot of things, and they're picking up a lot. So it's a really interesting age to have set him at.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because it's like 5, those, you know, I'm seeing my 5-year-old son now, and, you know, it's not so much that I've cast him in the role of Sean, but I do this kind of compare and contrast, where it's like, well, Sean, I wrote about this kid who's 5, and now I have this son who's 5. Like, are they doing the same thing? And, you know, it's an interesting kind of moment to see if there are any parallels. There are none, I promise. but in writing Sean, you know, it's funny because, like, I remember, I have the vaguest memories of kindergarten and being 5, but they feel nebulous. Like, I have them, and, like, the edges aren't really defined. Like, it's pretty fuzzy, but, like, I have succinct memories of, like, taking a nap on the floor in my mm-hmm. kindergarten class, or like, you know, drawing particular pictures, and, like, you know, it's a total sidebar. Forgive me for going off on a tangent here, but the real kind of genesis for this book came about when I was having dinner with my mother years and years later. I mean, this is, like, you know, maybe 2016, 17. And I have this very vivid, distinct memory of something that happened to me as a kid. And I brought it up with my mom kind of very, you know, lightheartedly, like, hey, mom, you remember that thing that happened to me when I was 5 or 6 years old? And she kind of looked at me funny, and she was like, that never happened. And I was like, what are you talking about? Of course that happened. She's like, no, but, you know, I don't think that's true. And, like, for the life of me, it just was really unnerving. Like, I couldn't get over the fact that this thing that I remembered vividly enough, my mother either didn't, or, you know, like, we just couldn't reach a common ground of this event, this recollection. And it freaked me out. Like, it was like, oh my God, like, if that's not true, if that didn't
then happen, what else isn't true, of course.
Yeah. And all of a sudden it's like, oh no, like, here we go. Like, this is, like, you know, all bets are off now. That was honestly the kind of, like, you know, thinking specifically to repressed memory syndrome and recovered memories, and how that helped kind of fan the flames for the satanic panic period. Like, I I feel as if that was the kind of like, oh, there's a story here. And like, what would that story be? And that's what led to Whisper.
Right. How long did it take you to write the book?
Good question. I started it in, this is the second book I've written for Quirk. And the first was called The Remaking, and that came out in 2019. So I was writing it probably in 2019. That's when I started. And then I had all of 2019 and probably a chunk of 2020. Yeah. I had a good chunk of time, like a year to write this one. And I would, you know, give it to someone to read. They would tell me what was awful about it, and then I'd work on it. And then, this one definitely went through a lot of revising to achieve what it is now. Thank goodness.
Were you a horror fan as a kid?
Very much so. Oh my God, yes. To the point where family members have always been a little concerned, you know, like, you know, maybe we shouldn't watch this, or don't you want to watch something that's happier or funnier?
My son, he watches some interesting cartoons, but
man, well, yeah, that's the scary. I mean, like, don't get me started on like what kids are watching today. Like, it's phenomenal how, like, you know, just because there's so much and it's just available at the, you know, touch of a screen. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife and I don't know if we're good police officers of, you know, the kind of like safeguarding our children from what they're exposed to on Netflix or Amazon. It is daunting to be like, what are you watching now? What is that? Like, what, like, where did that show come from? Like, how did you find it?
But I think one thing, and this is sort of, you know, just kind of tying it back to what we were talking about before, because we were talking about things that were available to children when, you know, Sean was five, like, yeah, He-Man and these stories of, you know, fantastic transformation. There's a lot of creators now who grew up with that and are, yeah, reinterpreting it and expanding the stories. So, yeah, you know, like, my kids will watch the new DuckTales, and there's a more coherent magic system in it, and, yeah, a bigger story arc that deals with different types of magic. And there's like even a line where Scrooge McDuck says something to the effect of, oh, you know, like, his auditors are saying, you're spending a lot of money on spells that counteract curses. And he's like, ah, if you knew how many curses were on my head. And there, I think a lot of this comes from the fact that these children who were probably, you know, these creators who were probably born at the tail end of the Satanic Panic, but had these shows,
yeah,
but wanted more out of them,
yeah,
are now creating them. And I do, yeah, wonder how, you know, it's everywhere and it's mainstream. And as we talk about the fact that things are cyclical, I do wonder sometimes how that's going to affect the next generation.
Yeah, yeah. No, all bets are off, right? Like, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, like, I'm watching Adventure Time with my oldest.
Adventure Time is wonderful, yes. Yeah. But you wouldn't know what it's about when you start watching it.
No. And it feels like the narrative is a snake shedding its own skin, where it just kind of grows and evolves into something more, and it goes deeper and deeper. I have to imagine, I feel as if I can see the raw inspirational material there that kind of funneled through. And like, you know, I think I watched those, the same kind of shows that he did, you know, creating that show. I don't know. It's amazing.
Pendleton Ward, that's his name.
Pendleton Ward.
Well, even, I mean, so you want to talk about, you know, like, when, you know, you have like Sean, who says that he experienced all of these things, but my children watch Gravity Falls, yeah, which to me is almost like horror light for children, yeah, and there's a little bit of a Lovecraftian lore going on towards the end, but the character of Bill Cipher is terrifying, and there are summoning instructions. So aside from a little bit of occult stuff, you know, it's not even like people who are looking at this, because back in the 80s, you know, when Sean was a child, people would just interpret crazy things as something else, like Cabbage Patch Kids are evil and you're signing an oath. Yeah. But here we have our kids watching Gravity Falls, and there are literally characters who are drawing these fictional Illuminati-inspired nightmare demons and summoning it. And of course, the first thing my children want to do is go out with their sidewalk chalk and draw Bill Cipher on our driveway.
That's amazing.
So, you know, it makes me wonder, when I was reading Whisper Down the Lane, just... It shows how far things have come with allowing the type of fantasy that's in children's entertainment.
Yeah.
But it also shows that, you know, maybe the enemy is just called something else now.
What is that amazing saying? The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing people he didn't exist.
Yes.
Just that idea of, like, you know, culture and pop culture, the, you know, Satan and, you know, all it's just out there and feels very defanged almost. Not for everybody, but, you know, it's so ubiquitous. It's so, you know, it's in
Little Nas X would probably disagree at this point.
Yeah. Well, I think what Little Nas X did was, you know, I think that, like, you know, Gravity Falls has been, that ran for, I mean, that's out it was, there.
Yeah.
It's on the table. And, you know, I think, you know, for every Harry Potter or Little Nas X, like, I think there's this kind of low simmering threshold for the devil. You know, it's a great storytelling tool. And but then every so often you just have this flashpoint where it almost taps so deep into the zeitgeist that, like, everybody listens to it. And I think, like, it's hard not for this to feel political at a certain point, but like the talking point in of itself becomes so, like, you have to have an opinion on it. And where do you stand on Little Nas X? And where, like, what does this mean for society at large? And it ceases to be about the video or the art that is being made, and has so much to do with, like, our sense of morality. And I don't know. I feel like I'm scratching at a larger point and not
well,
making
no,
it.
Well, no, because, you know, and because it calls back to the Like a Prayer video from the 80s So what are you working on now?
I'm working on the next book. I don't know how much I can talk about it yet. Maybe it's going to be a ghost book, a ghost story, a spooky book. So, which I'm really excited about. Terrified because
this one wasn't spooky, and nor was the remake. those were just tame. Buckle up.
I mean, I'm excited for it because I feel like it's new for me. And, like, I've just been doing nothing but reading gothic novels and ghost stories and haunted house books, and, like, it's just been like, and it's been perfect for the pandemic, because I've quarantined. You know, everybody feels like a ghost now, and we're haunting our own homes and our apartments, and, like, this is the new normal for the year. And I feel like my suspicion is, I'm gonna go on record as saying, I bet there will be a decent amount of ghost stories coming out of the pandemic, because it's, you know, we're, because of the isolation that we've been in, it's been, you know, a good time, a prime time to kind of focus on our ghosts.
Excellent. Well, I cannot wait to read it. And we appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
Oh man, thank you so much for having me. It's such a blast. I can't wait. This summer is going to be a spooky summer, right?
Like, yeah, it sure is. You know, yeah.
Thanks to Becky. We're going to bring it back to Becky.
Yes, like, thank you, Becky.
It's Becky, if you're out there listening to this, thank you. We appreciate it.
Yes, we do. So the remaking is already out.
The remaking's out.
As of last year, and Whisper Down the Lane is out as well. So check your library, your local bookshop, Overdrive, whatever, wherever you get your books, check it out. Is there an audio version?
There is. Actually, there's one for both. Both the remaking and Whisper Down the Lane got audiobooks. So yeah, they're out there.
Cool.
And I'm so nervous to listen to. I haven't listened to Whisper Down the Lane yet. I'm building up the courage.
Is it because it's your work hearing it?
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was experiencing it as an outsider.
It's just so, you know, it's so hard to I have had, you know, people listen to it for me and they say it's great. So I am relieved. But it is that moment of like, oh God, like, you know, these are the words I can't help but hear the doggerel that I wrote. So, you know, it's the reader, the person who read it did a really amazing job. I've heard little snippets, but it's just, it's a personal kind of like, you know, I'm very scared.
Well, don't be, I'm sure it's wonderful. All right. So this was Jessica with Turn the Page Podcast. Our guest today was
Clay McLeod Chapman.
And tune in to or check out Syosset Public Library's Facebook page, their trending page, because we have lots of scary things for you to enjoy this summer. We are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.